Okay, welcome back. This is lecture segment 4 on what are the main beliefs of the gardeners. And again, the quotations from this segment can be found in the fourth slide of the presentation. All right, one of the most prominent features of the gardener's belief system concerns a respect for all life. That's the reason they're vegetarian, because they believe it is wrong to eat other creatures. When they need to move locations into the Fender Bender body shop, for example, they relocate the rats rather than kill them. And they're constantly talking about kind of relocating creatures. They try to kill as little as they can. This respect for other forms of life is one of the reasons they spend so much time learning the names of plants and animals. Another reason, as we'll see later, or as we learn with Toby, is that when you know the names of plants, you're able to find them in the wild and make use of them for food. So the gardener's kind of overwhelming respect for life, we can already see, is in direct contrast to certainly Secret Burger, which we learned last time, sort of chews up all sorts of humans or animals, but then also potentially humans into something like a hamburger. And then it also contrasts with Scales and Tails, which tends to treat humans as, or I'm sorry, it tends to treat women as sort of less than human. All right, the ideas of the gardeners, again, are expressed in Adam 1's sermons, so we'll be looking carefully at a couple of passages from Adam 1's sermons here. Okay, so generally, Adam 1's sermons express an understanding of human life as not superior to other forms of life, even when it comes to the seemingly lowliest forms of life. So if we look on page 160, again, this page wasn't in last night's reading, but what I'm attempting to do here is give you an overview of the gardeners as they appear throughout the novel. So the passage reads, "We're inclined to overlook the very small that dwell among us, and yet without them, we ourselves could not exist, for every one of us is a garden of subvisual life forms. Where would we be without the flora that populate the intestinal tract, or the bacteria that depend against hostile invaders? We teem with multitudes, my friends, with the myriad forms of life that creep under our feet and, I might add, under our toenails." Atwood is never afraid to have Adam 1 be sort of a little bit gross, and that's one of those moments when Adam 1 is being a little bit gross. So what Atwood is making reference to here is that research that's come out in the past decade or two that indicates that, well, we've known for a long time that we have bacteria in our gut that help us sort of digest food. Research in the past few decades has shown more and more that kind of bacteria is sort of crucial to our existence as human beings. And so the point that Adam 1 is trying to make is that human beings, even though they want to believe sometimes that they are kind of separate from all the other creatures, actually live these lives that are highly interdependent with other creatures. And so Atwood, again, is drawing on the ideas from ecology and from biology, right? The notions of ecosystem, notions that humans are a part of the ecosystem. The corpse in general in the novel sort of deny that belief, right? That humans live in these kind of interconnected worlds. All right, so the second passage that I want to look at here is, "We thank thee, O God, for having us," this is on page 53, "We thank thee, O God, for having made us in such a way so as to remind us not only of our less than angelic being, but also of the knots of DNA and RNA that tie us to our many fellow creatures." So what Atwood and Adam 1 are doing here is pointing out that because all living beings have DNA and RNA, and again, this was kind of research that emerged in the 90s and the early 2000s, all creatures are kind of interdependent, right, in ways that ecologists or kind of ecological activists have suggested for a long time, but that scientific research has borne out. The other thing that we'll note here in the reference to DNA and RNA in the second passage, we see another important feature of the gardener's belief system, that humanistic beliefs, which the novel mostly represents through Christianity, and scientific beliefs are not separate. And so we've been here before. When we discussed Frankenstein, we raised a version of the problems that can result when science proceeds without a sense of the human. We noted that Victor Frankenstein, in focusing on science alone, forgot a whole set of beliefs about what it needs to be human, caring for others, respecting the lives of others, and so on. And her depiction of the scientific driven aspects of the corpse, Atwood sort of seems to believe similar things about the corpse. So we can see Atwood is kind of continuing in Shelley's tradition. And again, I think I mentioned that Frankenstein is often considered the first science fiction novel. And, you know, as a woman writing science fiction, Atwood would certainly be looking to Shelley as kind of a kind of mother figure in some ways. Okay, so other sermons from Adam 1 expand on this notion that sort of humanist beliefs from the Bible and scientific beliefs can be mixed. So look at this passage from page 52, and I just want you to observe how it mixes scientific terms such as atoms and molecules with religious terms like spirit and God. So the passage reads, "Where were the scientific fools when God laid the foundations of the earth by interposing his own spirit between one blob of matter and another, thus giving rise to forms? Where were they when, quote, the morning stars sang together?" That's from the Bible. "But let us forgive them in our hearts, for it is not our task today to reprimand, but to contemplate our own earthly state in all humility." The passage continues, "God could have made man out of pure word, but he did not use this method. He could also have formed him from the dust of the earth, which in a sense he did, for what else can be signified by dust but atoms and molecules, the building blocks of all material entities?" All right, so what Atwood is doing here, which is what she does throughout the sermons, is that she takes words from the Bible. So the Bible talks about Adam being formed from the dust of the earth, and she reinterprets dust to mean atoms and molecules. So atoms and molecules are tiny particles, and if you sort of squint at them, if you think of them the right way, they're a bit like dust. All right, so the passage continues. "In addition to this, he created us through the long and complex process of natural and sexual selection, which is none other than his ingenious device for instilling humility in man. He made us, quote, a little lower than the angels, but in other ways, and science bears this out, we are closely related to our fellow primates, a fact that the haughty ones of this world do not find pleasant to their self-esteem. Our appetites, our desires, our more uncontrollable emotions, all are primate. Our fall from the original garden, when it's a fall from the innocent acting out of such patterns and impulses to a conscious and shamed awareness of them, and from thence comes our sadness, our anxiety, our doubt, and our rage against God." So what this passage does is it mixes evolutionary theory, so natural and sexual selection, with notions of divine creation. It thus suggests that scientific systems and humanistic systems can work together. On the message boards, I'll ask you what you think the second part of the passage means, but for now, it's enough to know that the passage rewrites the Garden of Eden story, which Eve, are cast out of the garden after eating of the tree of knowledge. So it takes that story and it makes it a story about how humans came to have negative emotions such as sadness, anxiety, doubt, and rage. So in contrast to belief systems that would say that science has nothing to learn from religion or that religion has nothing to learn from science, the gardeners see human traditions, so God created humans in his own image and therefore humans are special, merging with scientific traditions. Humans are simply the accidental product of evolution. The gardeners and Atwood herself seem to think that it's important to balance these two traditions, that if you're going to have a kind of an accurate view of the world, especially as things take a dark turn, as they do in the world of the novel, you're going to need both science and humanism. All right, so I'll close this section with a quotation from, again, Jerry Canavan, who describes the gardeners' beliefs in this way. "The ultimate intellectual project of God's gardeners is to reconcile science to humanism and find some way to move forward with both. In this manner, Atwood suggests, science can continue making important discoveries, but it'll be conscious of how these discoveries impact the human." And so again, we can think of the Year of the Flood as engaging some of the same problems that Frankenstein engaged. This ends section 3.